Hey, grandkids, Ken just did his best Eddie Vedder impersonation and forgot to get it on air.
Man, everyone missed out on that one.
Yep, this is the way. You start off with disappointment with OPA 36, so don't feel like it's going to get any better for the next 60 minutes.
Right. Well, I hope at least our audience can feel like they're experiencing something that's adjacent to greatness, because that was quite the... quite the performance I just gave off mic. No, we were talking about fellow stunt grannierist Jeremy.
Yes.
Perhaps being jumping in and saying something during the podcast. And I just thought, yeah, I had to give it a little Pearl Jam spin there. But anyway, we were... Jeremy spoke on a podcast today. So I think it would sound a little something like that, is what I was trying to say. Wow. I apologize. I don't know if that came through, but.
I hope that came through, because I have entirely too much gas at this current moment. So as I belch my way through this podcast, you can look forward to that too, grandkids.
We were hoping there was like a mute button or something we could, but unfortunately we don't have that sort of technology here at the studio. So we're going to have to just do our best we can. It's not, trust me, it's not good for anybody. Kevin is in distress, but he's pulling through here to bring some entertainment.
Yes, I am. And our first round of entertainment comes in, well, something that I'm still confused by. There was a study done showing that girls in Israel, it was a study in Israel, from sixth grade to the end of high school, they were given two sets of exams, and one was graded by an outside source who did not know the people, and another was graded by the teachers who knew them by name. And the papers graded by the people that knew them always graded the women lower in the math, and it did not occur in English or Hebrew.
Yeah, I think part of the study was done in Israel, which is why Hebrew was one of the languages they were learning. But yeah, so it's and the other thing that they showed in the study was when they hid the gender of the students, when they hid their sex, when they were having the teachers grade the papers, the girls were outscored the boys. By, like, a lot, I thought, right? Like, 20 points, I think.
Yeah, it was...
And then, when they had them grade the papers knowing the genders, the boys scored better by the same amount. So, that was just, like... And this is a math test. So, it seems like there would only be, like, right or wrong answers, right? Like, it's really weird.
That's what I don't quite get. I know that some classes, like, I remember geometry, like, you had to have the process right. It wasn't always about the answer, it's more about the process.
That is true.
And some of the higher education ones, maybe like a calculus, you can grade on a process, but I'm just sitting there going, okay, in sixth grade, what process is there to go through? Like, multiplication, some division.
That's what I was trying to think. In sixth grade,
but then, you know, again, and even algebra, like, it's pretty, to me, it seemed pretty straightforward.
You know what, though? I bet in sixth grade today, they're doing more advanced stuff than what we were when we were in sixth grade.
That is quite a good possibility. I could probably ask one of my nieces.
So, I don't know. I would say they're probably into geometry, at least. So, I mean, there could be potential there for some gray area, maybe? I don't know.
Right. I would definitely expect some gray area, but still, most of the times, I feel like a lot of it did depend upon the answer that you came to.
Well,
and
when
not...
you take a test, it does a lot usually depend on the answer, what kind of, like, you know, how things go for you. It tends to matter, yeah.
I feel like there were times, and now that I'm thinking about it more, that I got dinged for not doing the right process, but I got more points because I still came up with the right answer.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And, like, getting, like, not showing your work, maybe, and things like that.
There was definitely a not showing your work, so I don't know if that was factored into these.
I bet you're right.
Yeah. But again, like, I feel like that was a little bit later than sixth grade still that I started to have to worry about that stuff.
Again, I think because they're going to be doing multiplication and division in third grade for my daughter, and she is in first grade now. So, like, she's already been doing, like, two-digit addition and stuff.
Gotcha.
Which, I don't know if I remember doing that in first grade.
I definitely do not remember what I did in first grade whatsoever. I'm sure I went to class. I'm sure I was wearing a plaid tie, blue slacks, and a white shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was my first year at St. Mary's.
Outside of that, I don't really remember much.
Yeah, that was my first year at St. Mary's, and... yeah, we had a, well, it wasn't a clip-on, was it? A clip-on tie? It was more like a already tied, you just kind of slip it over your head.
Yeah, it was an adjustable tie.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you're in first grade, you don't really, I guess, you know, they don't want the parents to have to tie ties all the time, basically.
Yeah, it was kind of nice. I mean, I don't feel like I see those most of any time now. Like, it is just the clip-on. Like, the clip-on just seems a little more uncomfortable to me because there's just more hanging off of your neck and there's kind of a metal piece in there.
Sure. It's like pulling down on your collar all the time then.
Right.
Not like it's kind of attached to your neck, you know. It's a totally different ball game. And I'm glad we're taking time to talk about this because I was hoping we would get to this, you know, tie conversation. Well, I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to tell, I guess, what kind of tie someone's wearing.
Right.
That's something everybody should keep in mind.
Well, there were no ties in these math scores. They flipped and flopped. And
well, whether they thought that the student wore a tie, perhaps, that affected the scores, it would seem.
Well, and that was the other thing that that caught my interest. Is that there are people, if a teacher just thinks someone's smarter, that they will subconsciously grade them better. And I just remember, and this was in college, I was just, when we were in Italy, everyone knew that I went out, including the professors.
You like to party.
Yeah, but I did as much...
You like the nightlife.
Yeah, I like to party, and I like the nightlife, but I also did my work, like...
But you like to boogie.
Yeah, but that was the important part to them, is that I like to boogie.
That was the important part to all of us, I think. Well,
so I was great. I still feel like I was graded more poorly just because of the perception... that I didn't put any work into my work.
Right.
When my roommates were doing just as little work as I was, it's just that they weren't out. They were wasting time with their girlfriends, or most of the times they were fighting with their girlfriends.
Which could also be seen as a waste of time.
Right. You know, just because they did it behind closed doors and not in a bar, it was whatever. Like, nobody really heard about it. But the guy that goes out to the bars, hey, he's an easy target.
No, I think that's true. And it's kind of like a filter that you see people through. And, you know, I think there's, it can be just a bunch of little ways that it kind of builds up maybe. I don't know. It makes you think that people should grade tests without knowing who the students are, really.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not a multiple choice test where there's a clear defined...
True, yeah.
...answer. But again, they said that this was only just kind of true in math. Like, they weren't really going any further than that.
Well, it does make you wonder, though, like, why... What is it about... You know, math, is it just this cultural idea that, you know, males are just going to be better at math, which, you know, is not true, but it's kind of like a man's, realm almost.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I honestly didn't think about it until much later. And I feel like Mrs. Miller was our math teacher at St. Mary's. So I guess I had a strong woman figurehead in the math department.
Yeah, that's true.
Because she led our math counts team. Thank you very much. I was part of that.
Oh, I believe I was a part of that at one point. Because there was like a red t-shirt with like black letters, right?
Yep.
Black and white, right? It was like math and black, white. Was the counts part.
Right.
Kind of real sharp. At a diagonal, I think, right?
I don't remember that much. I do remember the Kellers, though.
Oh, the Kellers. Such beautiful Kellers. But we were, yeah. So, you know, I have a daughter, and I just feel like right now she's at the stage where she's just learning. It's all, like you say, multiple choice tests, so it's not like... There's a lot of room for wiggle room, really. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like kind of, you know, strange that there is this bias out there, I guess. Like, the teachers would probably say that they are not biased, you know?
Well, and that was the other interesting thing that they noted is that... I think it said all of the teachers that they... the teachers in the study were all women themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the other thing. Like, it's not just, like, a male doing this to another female... Or to a female. It's, you know, other women doing it.
Right. Kind of a subconscious... bias. So, I don't know. It is... I think it's really, interesting to do this kind of research and kind of see this stuff, though, because you really wouldn't believe it otherwise.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to read something like that, because, we've been saying it multiple times, like, you just don't think that there's a wiggle room in that kind of thing, but when you look back on it, there kind of is, so... Yeah, and you factor in just some type of natural bias, unfortunately. It's just kind of funny that just kind of happens subconsciously, too. Like, there's just all kinds of tendencies like that.
Right, and there still is, you know, some people out there who are going to be overtly sexist, you know, consciously, really. But still, it's not like that's completely disappeared, but there's less and less of that, I would say. The idea that there's still this kind of undetected sexism, if you will, it's just kind of, you know, strange.
Like, right.
And it's different than what kind of like the I don't know, historical feminist message of like all men are oppressors, you know. It's more like nuanced than that, I guess, but it's not like people want to say that there's, you know, already equality, like, you know, that's not the case either.
Right. Well, one place we all find equality, Ken.
Where would that be, Kevin? Scotland?
That would be in the graveyard.
Oh, right. I don't know. If you have a really nice tombstone, does that kind of put you ahead in the graveyard, do you think?
The graveyard game.
Yeah. When you're in the... Does that put you at the top of the graveyard game, would you say? I don't know. I wonder about that, because some people do have some pretty nice, like, pillars and monuments and things like that.
Yeah, there are some pretty nice ones out there. I don't completely understand that. I would be okay with, you know, being fish food somewhere.
I always thought it would be neat to, like, have a tree planted over you when you get buried.
Oh.
And I got this from a movie, Tree of Life, I think it was called. No. Mm. That was a recent movie. The Fountain, that's what it's called.
Oh, okay.
Hugh Jackman was in it. It was really kind of like a trippy movie. It was like split into three different stories in like three different time eras.
Oh, okay.
So there's like a conquistador time, like a modern day time, and then like a
future,
super future. Like this guy's traveling in basically a clear bubble through space, like at like super speeds. So yeah, it's pretty wild.
yeah, that would be pretty interesting. That'd be a nice way to use your decomposing body too.
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of like a acknowledgement that, like, you know, what is your body is. And for a while, I thought it'd be nice to get cremated. It'd be nice to get cremated, wouldn't it? But you know, that is almost in a way wasteful when you think about it. Like, just to burn it up like that.
It uses a lot of electricity.
There you go, too. Environmentally, it's not the best.
No.
Put some, you know, pollution in the atmosphere.
Yep. So,
But, you know, these are kind of like modern-day problems, really. I guess, you know, if things were different for people, let's say, early 19th century.
In Scotland.
In Scotland, yeah.
Just
you know,
not that I'm,
for example,
really surprised, but really when I read that they had mort safes, which are you know, they were cages for the tombs so that people would not break into them, and there was a heavy rash of body snatching,
right? So it's not just a sci-fi movie with pod people.
Yeah, this is real people.
Yeah, body snatching was a thing. I feel like, oh, this was like part of Frankenstein, right? People were like digging in the graveyard.
Oh, I would think that would be part of that story. Because, I mean, they do have to snatch a body to...
Or several.
Several.
Yeah. But, so yeah, but it's not just in stories. It was a real thing, like, because there was no availability for corpses, basically, for like medical people to learn about the body. And, you know, I guess somewhat understandably, the doctors were really wanting to have these bodies to look at, you know. Not because they were a bunch of pervs, but because they just wanted to learn how to be better doctors, really, because they didn't understand how the body worked. So
it was, I would have to say that this would be around the advent of quote unquote real science.
Yeah, I would say, well, I guess Frankenstein would have been the earlier part of that time, but the period of time I think we're dealing with here in this, these particular mort safes in Scotland, which are people can read about on this. I think we have a Slate article that.
That was Atlas Obscura.
Atlas Obscura, yeah. But the other article goes into the case of two particular. Well, these guys weren't even grave robbers.
No, in no way were they grave robbers. They did, in fact, sell to a doctor wanting corpses.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and apparently these guys were so terrifying that afterwards people would organize basically like the early equivalent of a block watch group or something, where they would accept it for a cemetery. So they would like be patrolling to make sure no one
snatched any bodies.
Yeah. Because there was such a demand for bodies.
Yeah, well...
These mort safes, I guess we should explain what they are.
And that's why it'd be interesting to know what exactly this doctor paid for. Because these two gentlemen, William Burke and William Hare, supplied fresh bodies to Robert Knox.
Yeah, the Dr. Knox, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, this is the wiki right there.
Oh, yeah. No, this is the one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I do believe that this, the people in question, they started out in this career of theirs, I guess, Mr. Burke and Mr. Hare, I believe.
Yes.
And apparently they're quite famous down through history over in the UK. But, or, yeah, I guess that's the UK, right? Scotland? Sure. They voted to stay in.
United Kingdom, yep.
So they were famous for being these murderers, basically. But it started out with them...
yeah, this guy owed them money. He owed them rent, but he died of natural causes in his room.
In 1827.
In 1827. So they sold him to Dr. Robert Knox for £7. So they did they almost doubled their money.
Because he only owed £4.
Right.
So they've got to be seeing pound signs at this point.
Yeah, they're seeing those weird funky L's.
Yeah, I'm not talking about hashtags here. I'm talking about the British pound. Yeah,
it's not an umlaut. Like, I don't know what that's called.
Yeah,
what that L is exactly short for?
Pound.
Well, yeah, I mean it's always used for pound, but
isn't like the abbreviation for pound an LBS?
Oh yeah,
it's like from some Roman abbreviation. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, so we basically solved that one, you know. Chalk that mystery solved.
Done. Unsolved mysteries.
Take it out of the unsolved column and then put it into the solved, because we just took care of that one. But these, so these guys, Hare and Burke, Burke and Hare, they say, hey... I'm seeing pound signs here, buddy. And they're like, do you mean hashtags? No. I mean money, you dummy. So they get the idea then, because apparently they're running this lodging house, that they're going to, you know, just instead of waiting for their lodgers to die, they're just going to help them along. And then trade in their bodies for some cash.
Yeah, that is one way to do it. I mean, and if they're smart about it, they would get them to pay up front.
Oh. Well, I guess they could just take their money at their leisure, really, after they're dead.
Yeah, after they're dead.
So, yeah, you don't need to arouse suspicions or anything like that.
Right.
Just say, oh, no, don't worry. You don't have to, we'll take care of the money later. Don't worry about it. That's not a good sign.
Yeah.
But so then they just kept this up apparently for,
For 17 murders.
Yeah.
In the, last one was an 18-year-old, intellectually disabled, gentleman nicknamed Daft Jamie, who the locals knew, when he showed up on the autopsy table, everyone knew that,
he was recognized.
Yeah, he was recognized. The other people must have been weary travelers. They did not really check his ID well enough, evidently.
Right. And that was the part that was, like, kind of mind-blowing, that they would just sort of, like, take bodies, no questions asked. Like, just, you know, have, like, a body deposit slot that you could just kind of bring him in. Back your car up and just, oh, okay, yeah, sure, this guy looks pretty fresh. Let's see. How about seven L's? Oh, no, that's pronounced pounds. Okay. Very well. Pip pip then. Yeah, I mean, nothing like that obviously would happen today, I don't think.
I'm sure it would happen today.
Although, wasn't there some kind of controversy about...
Maybe not an autopsy or anything like
sure,
that.
Sure, because I guess the upshot is that after this kind of event, they... You know, because prior to this time, it was illegal for people to... like, people couldn't get donors. Because... And I think it's because people thought it was like... You were like going to be damned to hell or something if your body wasn't
fully
preserved
intact.
Or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it was like impossible for doctors to get this, which I, you know. So after some of this stuff went down, they ended up allowing that, which was probably the right move. Because this is a bad incentive here.
Yeah, that is not the standard that you want to set with your society.
Exactly. But, you know, I guess the problem that these people were having with these body snatchers is basically a problem with keeping their bodies in these graves, right? so they've got the mort safes to help with that. They lock down anyone from digging in.
Right.
And I guess another possibility would be to have the bodies trying to get out, Kevin.
Yes, you could be trying to keep the bodies in.
Right. Some kind of zombie-like event.
Yes, there was an article that really jumped to a far more amusing article. On that caught my eye on Vox.com, that there's a little zombie simulator that they previewed. I already have that up.
Oh.
Jeez, people. Trying to run a tight ship around here. Now, you didn't get to use this a little bit earlier.
Right.
But they have, I believe the top is bite rate. They have the walking rate for how quick your zombies move. So they feel like it would end up, the zombie virus would spread, like, everyone always kind of pretends that it's like wipes out a whole area at first. They're saying this, a zombie starts out just in one city, you know, or one area, and then spreads from there.
Hmm. Yeah, so I wonder, I mean, it seems like a kind of cool, idea, but... I wonder how much they are factoring in things like, you know, natural landscape. You know, is there rivers that are going to stop these zombies? Are there, you know, do people catch on to the zombies over time? Or is it just like, because I think it seems like they're kind of modeling it on basically... a disease, like a virus, you know, that would spread
right.
through contact.
Well, and it does spread through contact. And then that's what was kind of funny. Like, it was, I don't know, it's always fun to play with a simulator, no matter what it is. And I didn't have to hold this down earlier. It just kind of ran on its own, so this kind of sucks.
Wait, let go at once. Yeah, you're fine.
Oh, okay, there we go.
Now, I have... Let's see. So I had set this to a level where I don't think it was going to create too many zombies. Because I changed... So the cool thing about the simulator is you can change some of the variables.
Right. Yeah, there's the bite ratio.
Which is basically... Well, the bite-to-kill ratio, I think.
Yeah, bite-to-kill ratio.
The BTK, you know, stat... You can change basically how often when there's a zombie versus human encounter, how often is there going to be a bite and versus a kill? Which I guess there could be both, though.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of times in The Walking Dead that there is a zombie bite but then a zombie kill because you don't automatically turn into a zombie. And in most instances, it does take some amount of time to become a zombie.
Right. So it kind of depends on the rules, I suppose, if you will.
Right. And they also have how fast a zombie walks is one of the variables.
True, that's another one. So I was a little confused about that one, because it was like, how far can a zombie walk? A mile? Was that it?
Yeah.
Or how fast can a zombie walk a mile?
Right.
But it's not in any unit, so I was a little confused. Is that like minutes?
Well, it says time to walk 1 mile.
Right, but...
So like an average human takes 20 minutes to walk a mile.
Okay, but 11. 11 what? Is that 11 minutes?
I guess so, yeah.
11 seconds?
I would guess it's 11 minutes.
Because that makes a big difference.
If an average human walks it in about 20 minutes, I believe it's 20. It's either 15 or 20, something in that area. I would imagine that a zombie would be slower than that. They don't tend to run. I mean, there are some running zombies.
Sure, but I guess then...
More of them, though, are kind of your slow walker variety.
Well, sure, but I guess, like, it starts out on the simulator a default of 11...
Mile, 11 minutes
for a mile.
For a mile.
Which seems pretty fast to me.
Oh, that is pretty fast.
So, I don't know. These must be running zombies, or at least, you know, not fucking around zombies, because they're moving pretty good according to this. Although, now that I'm looking at this... I don't really see anything spreading.
Didn't you set them out in St. Louis there? Yeah, look at how dark this ring is.
Oh, that's what it is, huh?
Yeah, it's supposed to look blood red, but my screen, I don't know if it's too bright.
Maybe it's not bright enough. I'm going to brighten that up. That's a little better.
Yeah, that didn't really help. But on my monitor at work today, it was blood red where the zombies were spreading. So I guess I can kind of see where they're spreading.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's been like 230 hours, and the zombie that I started in, I guess St. Louis, is almost, a little bit farther to get to Michigan there.
Yeah, and it looks like they're kind of closing in on Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Because I would say that's Cincinnati and Columbus right in there. Or is that Columbus? I think I started it here last time. Yeah. And I think that's Cincinnati. Oh, that would be Dayton. Cincinnati, Dayton, and then...
Columbus.
Columbus. In Cleveland up there.
Pittsburgh.
Yep. It certainly helps to kick the disease off in a city. Always seems to jumpstart things.
Ooh, it's just about to get to Chicago there, it looks like.
Chicago goes down pretty quick in this simulator. The bigger the city, the quicker it falls.
I would think so. I mean, that does make a certain amount of sense. Because the article that we linked to from here, from crack.com, which was really funny. I should have checked the author's name, but...
Yeah, it was 7 scientific reasons why a zombie outbreak would fail quickly by David Deedle.
Yes.
And number 7 on said list was they have too many natural predators.
Right. Because I guess their biggest predator really would be humans, non-zombie humans.
Right. Because that's the one thing that always does bug me about a zombie apocalypse, is that I never quite understand...
What is the thing that really bugs you about the zombie apocalypse? What is it that really chaps your ass?
The military somehow has been rendered moot, and I guess that was one thing that... that was a much higher number here. But the level at which we go, oh, yeah. Oh, okay, that's right. It's on a second page here. Just the arm. It's like, oh, okay, the army's wiped out. It's just like, the army's wiped out? Like, really? Like, especially with, again, even just using the Walking Dead example, it's just like, why didn't they catch on to the tactics a little bit easier than they did?
Right.
Like, when you know that it's coming, there shouldn't be any reason that you couldn't.
Right. I mean, even if
it at a minimum slow things down, like there's only so many dead people.
Right. And even if the outbreak happened like on an army base, like they would, you know, there would still be other army bases for them to react out of. And it's not like the zombies are going to like start using tanks and helicopters, you know, they just shuffle along.
Yeah, I mean, just weaponry like that, like, and they even were joking about using the Air Force. It's just like, why do all these zombie movies forget about the Air Force?
That's true, too. They helpfully had a picture of someone gunning a minigun out at the side of a helicopter, which would do a lot of damage to a bunch of zombies, I would think.
Yeah, and there are roughly 300 million people in the country.
I would say so.
And yeah. They said that 14 million people have hunting licenses out of that 300.
As far as like people being armed, yeah, that would be.
But
a problem.
I mean, that's not even. I would guess that's not even the number of people that are fully armed. You know, just because you like guns, you don't necessarily hunt.
Well,
some people just like to shoot at a range.
Oh, no, exactly. Yeah, there's got to be more people with guns than that.
So I think the 14 million is kind of underselling it.
No, that's the floor, I would say. I mean, you probably, if you have a hunting license, I would say you most certainly have a gun. But yeah.
I would guess several.
Yeah.
If you have a hunting license.
Unless you're just like bow hunting or something. I guess there's people that do that.
Still, you can go all Daryl Dixon on their ass.
Oh, well, that's true, but...
I think it'd be better to be the quick draw bowman to kill a bunch of zombies.
I would want that guy with me for sure, because...
Yeah, he'd be pretty handy in a zombie apocalypse.
Lars, I forget his last name.
Anderson, I believe.
Anderson, yeah. He was pretty impressive with that bow and arrow, and I think he would... be a good guy to be friends with if there was really a zombie apocalypse.
And even if we could shoot flames out of our wrists, I think that would help. You can burn off a zombie head.
Well, it depends how flammable zombies are, I guess. And then, too, that would probably be bad for the environment to go back to our, ideas on cremation there. So, I mean, granted, that's probably not going to be necessarily number one in your priority list, you know, the environment at this point. But still, you got to consider it. Ooh.
Oh, thank you for the treats.
All would that zombie like... talk, you know, I'm sure you're hungry.
Yeah, these kind of look like eyeballs.
Yeah, we have just been given, I believe it's a chocolate crust.
Correct.
Chocolate crust with some cheesecake and one nice cherry on top.
Yeah, they're very nice.
The lady of the household.
All right.
Cheers.
Take a moment while we...
Everyone loves it when people eat on air.
Yeah.
It'll be a new thing. That's, every week we try something new on air.
That's been our biggest biggest suggestion. You know, we have that suggestion box where people can write in. And so...
new recipes every week.
Yeah, we need
a dessert recipe every week. For all of our home bakers out there.
That's really good.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Totally worth grossing everybody out with the sounds of us eating.
Yeah. Now, this is one thing that they do kind of address it. To go back to the number 7 point here, in some of the movies, and at least in some of the pictures, you do see maggots within a zombie. But in this article, they mention why the zombies wouldn't win. But they would eat all of their flesh.
Right. Eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
But it that's what it seems like to me. Like, I've thought that way before about zombie movies. It's like, how long would you have to live, you know, to outlive the zombie apocalypse, basically? Now, it depends because, you know, this article claims to have scientific reasons why the zombie apocalypse wouldn't work. And I feel like that's a little tongue-in-cheek, but you do have to remember that science may not apply here. It works if we're dealing with zombies.
It just also kind of made me... Another one of the points just...
Because, for example, it could be that there's something, you know, heretofore unknown about the zombie condition that makes it so that they're inedible for other creatures.
Yeah. That is a possibility.
Yeah. But, you know, that would be pure conjecture at this point. We don't know enough about zombies to say for sure.
But it would have to differ vastly from what science is telling us at the current moment.
According to this article. Yeah, we gave people the heads up earlier. Kevin was having some problems here. We don't really have control over it, folks. It's just, it's going to happen.
And I was thinking about this on one of the recent Walking Deads. The group was running out of water, and the zombies were following them the whole time. But they were just talking about how bacteria would start forming on the zombies from all the heat.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Unless, of course, they were not edible for some reason.
Right, which again
would be a zombie game changer.
Yeah, there could be a zombie game changer, but if we're just going with what we know currently with anyone's state of decay, not really gonna last in the heat.
State of Decay seems like it'd be a great death metal band name, maybe. Just throwing that out there to anyone who is an aspiring death metal musician. State of Decay. That's not a bad title. It's not a bad band name or a title. Go for your debut album. That'll work too. Basically, however you want to use it, go for it.
Many uses.
Yes. You could even double up. Have it a self-titled album. Just call it State of Decay. SOD. SOD. Perfect.
Well, Stormtroopers of Death is the sod, so I wouldn't really want to step on their toes.
All right, well then, we can work on that abbreviation. But yeah. That'll cost you extra. I'm not giving that away for free.
And one of the other things that they immediately mentioned thereafter about not being able to take the heat is not being able to handle the cold. Now, I can tell you a number of times from walking the dogs in single and or lower digit weather than that. Yes, if you were outside for an extended period of time as a zombie, unless there's, again, the zombie serum that makes them immune to the cold, they would freeze in some parts of the world.
Okay, I'm imagining that somehow... This just came to me. They have like a high salinity level. Like they're really, for some reason, really salty, right? These zombies. So that would preserve their bodies.
Okay.
Make it so that, like, you know, well, animals would still want to eat them though.
Yeah. Animals would still want to eat them.
Okay.
Cause that was the other natural predator part. Cause they were talking about how, and this part was just funny. They're like, Africa is in some ways inhospitable, but in a zombie apocalypse, the lions would be in paradise. Like, they would not be having to hunt for that much food. They'd be taking out zombies left and right.
Right. Like, I guess eventually, like, the lions could go, like, into the city, if there are cities, and then just kind of mop up on them.
Yeah, it could get kind of ugly. You might have a couple of zombie lions.
Wow, you know what? I want to see that in a zombie apocalypse movie. I want to see, like, a group of lions just, like, come into town and, like, just start ripping zombies apart.
I did see...
That's, like, a missed opportunity, I feel like.
Oh, I'm trying to think of what that Val Kilmer movie was, but I have another issue that's more pressing than that.
The Val Kilmer movie. Was it about lions?
Yeah, it was about lions. He was a famous, he was a doctor, I think he was a doctor, that...
Were they building a train?
The Ghost in the Darkness?
That was the movie. The Ghost in the Darkness?
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, it was based on a true story.
Right.
And I actually feel like that was when they were still somewhat following a true story.
You know, if you go to the Fields Museum in Chicago, you can actually see... I think one of the, maybe both the lions, maybe it's just one of the lions, but they have it like preserved on display.
Oh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep. So, little tip.
Cool.
That's kind of
you should have told me that when I got stranded in Chicago last year.
Oh, I would have. If I knew that you didn't know that, I would have told you. But then again, I didn't know you would care. Like, you have to probably have seen the movie Ghost in the Darkness to really...
Yeah, to give a care about that. For certain. Right. But yeah, there would be a lot of places. Bears, I would imagine, would have a problem with them. And then, well...
Even, like, rats, I would think, if they're not going to, like, be able to swat them away or anything, you know? Like, I guess I'm arguing against my position that, you know, I'm going to give it to the article here until I guess you would have to, like, go with some kind of, like, magical, you know, if you had a magical zombie, quote unquote, there would be really nothing stopping it from living forever. You know, something like the whites in Game of Thrones, or, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire, they're like reanimated corpses, but they're still frozen. Like, is it really, it's just magic basically that's moving them. So like, it's not like a quote unquote, scientific zombie outbreak.
Right. I feel like a lot of the movies and shows, tend to show some of these characteristics, though, that are not in favor of the zombie magic theory.
Sure. So let's say, you know, I'm just looking at a couple of Walking Dead minifigurines over here. And what are they?
Yeah, Rick Grimes and Daryl Dixon.
And they're adorable looking. They've got these big heads and big eyes, little bodies. But... Oh, boy.
That is not the end, kids. It's going to keep on coming. You got another 12 minutes.
Watch out for that.
Enjoy.
Watch out for that bread pudding, kids. That's all. That's the takeaway here.
Bread pudding's a bit of a bitch. So is whole milk.
Yeah, and heavy cream probably, right?
And heavy cream.
Yeah. It can do something bad to you. I'm learning things too today. But yeah, so
yeah, you loved this part of the article. They mentioned that biting is a terrible way to spread a disease.
Yes, that's true.
And the one line here is, in America, you have the Center for Disease Control, who don't tend to fuck around. Seriously, it's on their business card. And the fake business card that they posted have the words, "We tend not to fuck around."
Yeah, I like that.
And then they provided the example. They're like, remember the SARS outbreak that originated in China? The CDC and the World Health Organization put the clamps down on international travel the second it was found to have spread to North America. Flights were grounded, travel between borders was locked tight, and only 43 people on the entire continent died. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the first couple of people are up shit creek still.
And I guess that's the other thing that, you know, it depends on how you rate it on that. It was one of the variables on the zombie simulator was the likelihood of getting bitten versus killing the zombies. And I feel like in a lot of zombie movies and media, The Walking Dead, for instance, people tend to kill a lot more zombies than they end up getting killed by them.
They do have a very high kill ratio.
Like, I would say at least 10 to 1, would you say?
That sounds like a pretty low ball number, even.
Yeah.
Because Tyrese died this season here in the first episode. And before he died, the guy probably took out a good couple of dozen of walkers before.
Did he have a scene in the prison, maybe, where he killed a bunch of zombies? Or am I thinking somebody else?
Yeah, he did that. Because he, that was after he found out, that was after Carol killed his girlfriend. He kind of freaked out after they found her dead. And he went and just killed a bunch of zombies in the prison to, you know, help.
Blow off some steam?
Yeah.
To each his own, you know? Everybody's got their own ways to kind of unwind. But, yeah, so I think this article raised a couple good points here.
Yeah, and they did bring up, you had kind of mentioned it about natural obstacles. And even in the zombie outbreak article, which kind of let the spread happen a little more than what this article was saying. The simulator said that, you know, being out in, like, Wyoming or Montana would be one of the best places to be just because the population is so sparse. But also out there, you'd have to deal with all of the mountains. Like, right. They've never really shown a capacity to climb.
True.
You know, it's just a walking thing. And so they find their way around right. solid objects sometimes. But
the show's not called The Climbing Dead.
Yeah.
All right? Enough said.
The Climbing Dead. Book shut.
Case closed. But, I mean, maybe they could stumble along and kind of... I would say they might be able to crawl. Well, no, we've seen them crawl, right? I mean, at times...
Yeah, it would just be a little tough, I would say, for
them. You would kind of feel bad for the zombie if you were watching it.
To make it up 10,000 feet or so.
Yeah, and there's always the chance they're going to, like, fall over, you know, lose a balance or whatever. They're not the most coordinated.
Right.
So they might have to start over again. I guess here's a good question, and it might make a difference. What do you think, like... What would happen if a zombie just fell apart? Would each of its pieces still be able to move? Or is it like...
Yeah, they do tend to let the limbs still move, I think, in most of them.
And would they still be able to, like, spread their disease through that kind of thing, or...
It kind of depends upon the show. A lot of them do depend upon the biting more than... just a scratching.
Right.
Because, you know, if a hand is alive, it could get a hold of you, but it's not necessarily going to do any damage to you either.
Yeah, and I guess that was the other thing
It's kind of the different from the opposite of the Black Knight.
Yeah. If it has to be biting, there's going to be a time limit on that, because eventually those teeth are going to rot out, you would think. They never show zombies like brushing their teeth ever that I've seen in any forms of media.
Yeah, well, they do tend to have some pretty fugly teeth.
Right, and if they're, you know, if things are proceeding.
Yeah, if the zombies have been alive for a while, I agree with you. They probably start losing their teeth. I always did think that was kind of funny when Michonne first came on. She always removed their lower jaw so that they couldn't bite her.
Sure, that would be a way to do it, too. I mean,
yeah.
Take those teeth out as well, why not? And then, yeah, basically the zombies venomless, defanged. You can't do anything.
Yeah, defanged. I would say would be the good good term for that.
But yeah. So I guess I was thinking of 28 Days Later, where like even like a drop of the zombie blood can turn you into. Well, they weren't technically zombies.
Oh,
that was more of like a pure scientific zombie situation there.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's really rare that you would see a zombie movie where people are worried about getting a little bit of zombie blood on them or like zombie whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah. There's usually some type of damage. So individual body parts, even if they're around, they don't tend to pull an Evil Dead and start walking upright. Or they're not it from the Addams Family.
No, I haven't seen that. That would seem to be a little bit of a too much manual dexterity for a zombie to pull off to me.
Yeah, yeah. They both certainly had too much dexterity for your average zombie.
No, I don't think our thing, right, from the Addams Family was a zombie, at least in the way I understand it. Simply a disembodied hand.
Right. I wasn't calling it a zombie.
All right. I thought you were lumping it into the category of zombies there.
I was just providing it as an example, a counterexample to what a zombie hand might do.
You know, we might have younger listeners who haven't seen the Addams Family or Addams Family Values.
I was not the biggest Addams Family guy. Like, I'm just more familiar through names. I was a Munsters guy, but not really an Addams Family guy.
The TV shows, for sure, I was more of a Munsters guy, but I did enjoy the Addams Family movies with Raul Julia as Gomez Addams. I don't know if you... And,
yeah, Christina Ricci was in those.
Oh, that's right. Angelica Houston, I want to say. Yep. And she was Morticia Addams, and oh my God, Christopher Lloyd was Uncle Fester. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because so, I do remember playing an Addams Family game too.
Oh, that's right. I used to play that a lot. Fester's Quest.
Fester's Quest. Yeah.
Kind of a little bit of a rhyming thing going on, sort of. Although, really, they probably should have called it Fester's Quester if they wanted to kind of nail that home.
Thank goodness they didn't.
Man, if they only had me working for them back then.
It was certainly implied enough, in my opinion.
That might have been a little too on the nose for you there.
Yeah, it might have gone from cutesy to make me want to vomit cutesy.
Fester's Questers.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, it's come to that time of the evening, Ken.
Oh, man.
I've made it. I've gutted it out. Burps and all.
Hopefully a few of our listeners have.
Well, we enjoyed this one, and we also enjoyed a local beer.
Oh, yes, we did.
During the show, Seven Sons, Wee Beastie Scotch Ale. I did have to down. They had a new red ale there that I also tried this past weekend, which was the Firecat Double Red Ale, since I am making a red ale for the masquerade wedding. So, you know, I had to give that one a chance. It's a it's an Imperial. I was looking at going Imperial for the wedding. So,
well, yeah. How did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I think I like the Wee Beastie a bit more.
A wee bit more, would you say?
Yeah, a wee bit more.
Wee Beastie. You know, it's interesting because, I tried this beer recently and... it is quite good. It's got that bit of a Scotch flavor to it, almost. But I don't know. Was it aged in a barrel or something like that?
They used raw honey, raspberry, and no, they did not barrel it at all. At least from what their little statement says here.
Yeah, well, I don't know what gives it that flavor then. But yeah, I like it. It's definitely on the stronger side for beer.
Yeah, this one came in a 10-ounce glass if you got it there. But it was 9.5%.
Yeah, so that's pretty hefty there.
Yeah, it gives you a nice little punch in the mouth.
Yes.
Because that was the Imperial Red Ale was lighter, but it was still a 9% beer.
Yeah, that's pretty intense there.
Yeah, so I got two heavy hitters, and they were both good, but I do like the Scotch Ale just a wee bit more.
A wee bit more. So, yeah, I don't know, you might have said it before, but if you're ever in town, definitely check out Seventh Son Brewery. They've got a nice little bar there, and some tasty beers for you.
Yep. So, at DeFrango11, at Gozer33, at Stunt Granny, this is Opa.
This has been Opa. Enjoy your rest of your week.